All right. Well, good evening, everybody. It's a pleasure to be back. If we could take our Bibles, as David said, and open them to the book of Genesis, chapter 3, and verse 15. And I'm excited about this conference, excited about the six sessions that I have with you. And I'm particularly excited about this first topic that I was assigned, why Christians should support the nation of Israel. This came out, I think, in David's prayer, but it's interesting that even today as I speak, there's a Protestant denomination engaged in an economic boycott against the nation of Israel. Can you believe that? And in fact, when you study this throughout the last 2,000 years of church history, the Church of Jesus Christ, Christendom, as we might call it, has really not been pro-Jewish and pro-Israel. In fact, the pro-Jewish, pro-Israel position of Christendom is something that's a minority. And we are in that minority. So many people look at someone like myself, who is an evangelical Christian, and they say, well, how can you support a nation in the Middle East called the Nation of Israel, which is, as I speak today, primarily an unbelieving nation? I mean, you have pockets of believers within the Nation of Israel, but by and large, it's a nation that is in unbelief. Having rejected Jesus Christ nationally back in 2,000 years ago. So people want an answer to the question, well, how can you support a nation like that? And so I'm going to try to not only ask, but answer that in this presentation. So we have, to answer that question, three parts. Number one, what is the divine purpose for Israel? Number two, we want to look at the divine protection of Israel. And then once you get those first two bullet points down, then that puts us in a position to answer number three, the proper perspective concerning Israel. So let's start here with number one, the divine purpose for the nation of Israel. And that's why I had you open to Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15. Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, this is right after the fall of man, and this is what we read. God says, I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel. Now, this is what people refer to as the proto-evangelium, which just means the first gospel. This is the first reference we have in all of Scripture to the gospel, to the fact that there is a Messiah coming, who's coming from the seed of the woman. The woman here would be who? Be Eve. So the devil, right out of the gate, is put on notice that there's coming one, a descendant of Eve, who one day is going to crush the serpent's head. Then, at this point, the issue becomes, well, which people group, which nation is God going to use to bring forth this Messiah who will play this pivotal role in history of crushing the serpent's head? Well, to answer that question, we need to go to Genesis chapter 11. You see, the story of the nation of Israel begins in Genesis 12. Most Christians are aware of that. But you can't really understand Genesis 12 until you understand what happened in Genesis 11. Genesis 11 comes before Genesis 12, right? Do you all agree with that? You say, we flew this guy across the Pacific to tell us that? But the Bible is structured in a particular way. It's ordered in a particular way. And you can't understand what's happening in chapter 12 till you understand what's going on in chapter 11. So chapter 11 is the famous or infamous Tower of Babel story. So So Genesis chapter 11 and verse 1 says, "Now the earth used the same language and the same words, and it came about as they journeyed east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. They said to one another, 'Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly.' And they used brick for stone, and they used tar for mortar. And they said, 'Come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top will reach into heaven, and let us make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth.' The Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. The Lord said, 'Behold, they are all one people. They all have the same language, and this is what they began to do, and now nothing which they purpose to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language, so that they will not understand one another's speech.' So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. Therefore its name was called Babel or Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the earth." So this is what I kind of like to call the first United Nations conference. They were coming together in a place called Shinar. Shinar is the Hebrew name. The Greek name is Mesopotamia. Meso means middle in Greek, and you might recognize the word Potamia. For example, in the United States, we have a famous river called the Potomac. So Potamia means rivers. Mesopotamia is between the rivers, and that's an area called Babylonia. Those two rivers being the Euphrates and the Tigris. So that's where this great one world project at the dawn of human history was taking place. And the Bible is very clear in Genesis 11 and verse 1, at that point in time, the earth used the same language and the same words. That's very significant because what God did here is He disrupted the project by confusing the language into multiple languages, preventing the builders from cooperating with each other. And so it's sort of like taking a stone or a rock and throwing it into a placid or calm pond. It reverberates, the wake reverberates outward in all directions. So what happened here had a universal impact on every nation. Why? Because there was only one language at this particular point in time. And the sin that was taking place at the Tower of Babel was exported into every culture. Every culture ultimately owes its origin to the Tower of Babel. And what was taking place, according to the writings of Alexander Hislop, who wrote a classic book called The Two Babylons, what was taking place is something called the mother-child cult. The worship of the mother and the worship of the child. And the way Hislop describes it through his study of Babylonian tradition and extra-biblical writings is there was a man named Nimrod. Now, Nimrod is mentioned in the Bible. You'll find him mentioned in Genesis 10 and verses 8 through 10. His name in Hebrew literally means revolt or rebellion. And Hislop, based on his study, says Nimrod was married to a woman named Semiramis. The two of them had a child named Tammuz. Tammuz was killed by a wild animal. And Tammuz was miraculously brought back to life through satanic powers. And when this happened, the world at that time began to worship the mother and the child. So, in essence, what happened at the Tower of Babel, when God confused the language, is this mother-child system, or idolatry, was exported into every culture. And Hislop indicates that you can find remnants of the mother-child idolatrous system in every culture you study. It's just the names have been changed from place to place.